Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 680. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about volcanoes, white sand beaches, black sand beaches, pine forests, and dog-worshipping guanchas as we go to the Canary Islands. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about the Canary Islands. I'd like to welcome to the show Alice Ford from alicesadventuresonearth.com. And Alice has come to talk to us about the Canary Islands. Alice, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and to talk to all of your listeners about the Canary Islands, because it's an absolutely beautiful place.
Well, and when we talk about the Canary Islands, let's put it on a map here first. And can I, in fact, find a lot of canaries on these islands?
No, they are actually not named after the canary bird. They were named after actually a dog. But to put it on a map, the Canary Islands are actually located about 60 miles off the coast of Morocco. And there's 8 islands, 7 that are the main tourist islands, and then a scattering of small islands that no one really visits. But that's where you can put it on the map out there in the ocean.
Okay. And this is not the first episode that we have done on the Canaries. You can also go back way back to episode 294, but that is 8 years ago or 9 years ago now. So it seemed like it would be worthwhile to talk about it again. So Alice, what is your connection to the Canary Islands, first of all?
Well, I've been to the Canary Islands a few times. I actually shot an ad campaign for them last year, and we visited all 7 islands. We did an in-depth tour of every single island, doing all the hiking destinations and points of interest on every single island. And I worked in conglomeration with the tourism board there. So I've spent a lot of time exploring all of the islands. And it was a really amazing opportunity to get to actually see every single island and all of the points of interest on all of them. So a really special opportunity. And then before that, I had actually visited the Canary Islands a few times for some conferences, because they actually have a few sustainable destinations on some of the islands.
Oh, okay.
And several UNESCO sites. One of my niches is sustainable tourism. I've visited a few times for that as well.
Excellent. And why should someone go to the Canary Islands?
It's hard to sum it up in one sentence, but...
How about two?
Absolutely. Canary Islands are this ornately unique landscape. Each island is incredibly different than the last. There are white sand beaches, black sand beaches, there are volcanoes, stunning scenery, views like the Grand Canyon on some of the islands. There are pine forests, and you can get everything. It's for both adventure tourists that love to hike and explore and people that want to sit back and enjoy a pina colada. So there's a little bit of everything, and you aren't going to see scenery like this anywhere else on the planet.
Well, and you mentioned it was off the coast of Morocco. I guess we haven't said where it belongs in terms of culturally. It is not Moroccan.
It is not. It is actually part of Spain, but it still has a lot of African roots, and the historical people that lived there before the Spanish Inquisition were called guanches. And so there's actually still a lot of historical artifacts and historical sites on the islands that are really interesting for people interested in the more historical aspect of the islands as well.
Well, and the name comes from the Latin for the island of dogs, Canaris, not Canary. And because the guanches worship dogs, and that was the part that I didn't know until I was doing the research for this show.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And on one of the bigger islands, Tenerife, there's actually some caves that you can visit where there are actually still some remains of the ancient guanches that used to live on the island. Hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting to see some of that more historical side of and the non-European aspects right. of the island.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary do you recommend? So first of all, there's a number of different islands, as you say, some major islands. Where would you recommend we fly into and get us started?
It depends on how long of a trip you're going to take. And I would recommend either going for 7 days or 14 days, while you could do a shorter trip as well. I would recommend either flying into Gran Canaria or flying into Tenerife. And if you fly into Gran Canaria, which is the largest island and probably one of the most popular, especially for Europeans, there's a ton of stuff to do on that island in itself. So you could also choose to just do one island. But I guess let's start with a 7 day itinerary, because okay. that's probably what most people would have the time to do, especially if you're coming from the US. So flying into Gran Canaria, you'd want to spend 2 or 3 days there. And the great thing about all the islands is that for the most part, you can take ferries from one island to the next. And if you're doing a 7 day itinerary, you would want to pick either the Eastern Islands or the Western Islands to save time.
Okay.
From Gran Canaria, which has beautiful beaches, it's got pine forests, there's some fantastic hiking on this island as well. Spend a few days there. Then you would want to depart in the evening to Fuerteventura, which you can take a ferry to. And that island has a lot of white sand beaches. That's the sandy, beachy island, because it is a little bit closer to the African coast. It gets that wind-swept landscape. And there's some beautiful sea caves there you can explore, and some great beachside restaurants. And from that island, you can spend a day and then take the ferry over to Lanzarote. And Lanzarote has Timanfaya National Park, which is about an area of about 1,000 volcanoes. And it's...
Oh, wow. Volcanoes I knew, 1,000 I did not know.
Yeah, so its nickname is the Land of 1,000 Volcanoes. And it's an absolutely otherworldly landscape. And I have never... I mean, I've been to Hawaii, but this was another level of extraterrestrial landscape. And there's a lot of volcanoes that you can hike to. And there's a lot of places where the lava or ancient lava has come up to next to the road, and you can get out and walk around in it. And it's really, really interesting. There's also a place there called Lejaria, which is this area where they have cultivated the ancient lava to grow wine. And you can do wine tastings there and even stay at a little winery as well.
Okay, well, let's finish the itinerary and then we'll come back and do this obviously in much more detail.
Yeah, so after Lanzarote, then you would want to fly to Tenerife and spend your last 2 days there before departing back to the United States. And you would connect through either Madrid, Barcelona, or Lisbon, most likely, flying from the U.S.
Okay. So you started us on Gran Canaria. And what are we going to do there?
So on Gran Canaria, there are a lot of things to do, and it's going to depend on what you're interested in.
Sure.
If you're into the beaches, then you're going to want to stay in the Las Conteras area, which is the big beach town. You can get some exercise there, walking along the beach, enjoying lots of different restaurants and cafes. There's paddleboarding you can do right outside if you stay on one of the beachfront hotels. But one of the things that I loved to do there was actually go up to the Tamadama Nature Park. And this area, it looks a lot like Northern California, which okay. is so surprising. There's these endless pine forests. When I saw it, I was like, whoa, I had no idea that anything like that existed, especially on an island that's close to Africa. So that was really interesting for me. And up near that area, there's also some other great places that you can hike and walk. One is called the Magic Window, and it looks out over this giant monolith called the Rock Nublo. And basically from this arch called the Magic Window, it's a natural sandstone arch. And if you go at sunset, you can see this giant monolith in the background, and it's absolutely stunning. So I highly recommend going and doing that. And you can also hike to the monolith. It's a little bit farther away. They're not close together, but you could hike that whole area. But that's all remnants of the old volcanoes that created the island. So I definitely recommend that too, and enjoying the beaches and other areas around the island as well. So that would be what I recommend on Great Canaria.
And when you say enjoy the beaches, you told us what area to stay in, which I've promptly forgotten. Are there a particular beach that you recommend?
Yeah, I really like the beach at Las Quinteras, okay. which is an area, but it's also a giant beach. It's several beaches. They're all connected. There's a long, long pathway that runs along the water there as well. So you can walk for miles as well. And some of the beaches have boats and things for rental, water toys and things like that. Some are a little bit more quiet, but there's three or four beaches that are connected along that one area that are all really, really nice.
And as I look at a map of the island, it's roughly 25 miles across, I would have to say. So to get around between the different areas, are you renting a car? Are you renting a scooter? Are you taking a bus?
I would recommend, and this goes for most of the islands, that you do rent a car or you join some sort of tour for the specific areas that you want to go to.
Okay.
So if you did want to go to the Tamadama Nature Park, you could join a tour out of the town or city that you're staying in. Or you could rent a one-day car if you're just going to go for the day. There are some buses, but if you do want to do a lot of walking around from place to place to place, then I recommend getting a rental car.
Okay. And you mentioned historical sites on some of the other islands. Are there any things we want to see before we leave Gran Canaria in terms of cultural sites?
Yes, I would definitely recommend seeing the Castle of San Cristobal. And this is an old fortress and castle. There's a couple of remnants now left, but you can see the area where it's sitting still out in the sea, and it's a really nice thing to look at. It's great living history.
Okay, excellent.
And then there's also some ruins at Puerto de Mogán, and it's the old remnants of an old city center that was on the island. It's now a quaint little fishing village, but you can walk around in there, and it's really, really cute.
Okay, and then I think you recommended that we head next to Fuerteventura?
Yes.
Okay. Or Strong Fortune, I think is the name of the island, if we want to translate that. I don't know why.
Yes, and actually the nickname for that island is Island of the Strong Winds.
Okay.
So this one is more of a desert landscape. So if you are looking just for white sand beaches, this is the island that you would want to spend most of your time on. It's actually fantastic for surfers. And there's some great beaches that you can go to, as well as some sea caves and natural swimming pools that are on the outskirts of the islands. Now, this island, you can choose to rent a car if you do want to explore, or you could stay in some of the bigger cities on Fuerteventura.
Puerto del Rosario would be the largest city, I believe, on the island?
Yes.
Now, you said there are some great beaches. I'm obviously going to go get you to get more specific on that.
Yes. So one of the ones that I loved the most was called Playa de los Molinos. And it's a very, very, very small fishing village. I think there's 30 residents that live there. And it's going to be a place where if you really want to get away from it all, that's where you would want to go. But the great thing about this beach is that there's actually some sea caves there. So if you go at low tide, you can actually walk out from the beach to this hidden sea cave that's there and wander around in there. Now you have to be careful with the tides, definitely, but there's also an area right out from the beach where the water fills up these natural swimming pools and you can float in there. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful with crystal clear water, and you can float in there and relax. There's one restaurant at this beach, and they make paella there that's pretty good as well. So definitely.
High praise indeed.
Recommend that, yes.
Well, and you said the name of this was Playa del Molinos, so the yes. Beach of the Mills.
I don't speak very good Spanish, okay. So I'm going to go with your...
I was just wondering if there was obviously mills or something in place. It looks like there are windmills on the island.
There are windmills, and you do pass the windmills when you go to this beach. There aren't any windmills at this beach, okay. But yes. And another thing that I recommend on the island, if you do want to do more outdoorsy stuff, is go hike at Piñitas Dam. Now, this is an area that's grown into I want to say mirage, but that's not the the correct term there. But it's created this beautiful area where there's some flowing water and palm trees, a little desert oasis, and there's some goats that live in the area. It's really pretty. And there's a ton of palm trees. There's also a little temple there from many years ago, and it's really pretty. There's also the Arch of the Pinedas is there, which is this beautiful sandstone archway that's not like what we have in Zion, but it is a smaller version of something like that. So it's really pretty if you're looking for something a little bit more picturesque that's not the beach.
Okay. And just for those who don't know what she's referring to there, Zion National Park in Utah and some of those sort of things. Not Zion as in the city of God in Jerusalem or something.
Yes, thank you.
And then you had mentioned UNESCO sites, and this would be the first of the UNESCO World Heritage Sites that we're talking about.
Yes. So the western side of the island, actually almost the whole thing is a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. And that beach that I was talking about, Puerto de los Molinos, is actually right at the northern end of that.
Oh, okay.
And so from there, there's not a ton of roads to explore this area, but there are a few. If you did have a rental car, you could obviously go to that beach that I was talking about. There are two other roads that go into the middle and the southern section, and you can actually get out and hike along that whole area, which is really, really pretty.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do on this island before we head out? You mentioned white sand beaches. We haven't talked about the fact that we're at and latitude that is right off Africa, as we mentioned. So warm water, or is it deep water?
It is. It's like the Caribbean, I would say, for those listeners that are from the United States. It is very warm, and you can walk out and wade in the water and float around. There are some rocky beaches, but if you're in the area, the eastern side of the island, there's a ton of different options for beaches. And also the southern end near Kofet is also really nice as well for beaches.
And you mentioned good surfing. You didn't say where on the island that was.
The great surfing is actually on the eastern side of the island where that wind comes off of Africa. So you're going to get some great waves over there.
Okay. Excellent. Anything else? Otherwise, we will move on. You wanted to head us a little further north here to Lanzarote.
Yes. Lanzarote is one of my favorite islands, and I stayed when I went there the last time in Arrecife, and it's a beautiful little coastal fishing village, but this is the island of the Thousand Volcanoes.
Right.
So Timanfaya National Park is also a UNESCO site, and the history of this place is so interesting because there was a period of time in the 1700s where the island was erupting constantly for 6 years. And historical records say that actually no one died at this time, which baffles me. But there were actually villages and people living in the area that is now this national park. So I find it really interesting that people went about their daily business while all these volcanoes were constantly erupting. Now it's obviously a national park, but it's definitely one of the high on your list things that you should do. And within the national park, driving in, you're going to pass by these fields of dried lava that are so striking. You can wander around in them and get out of the car. And if you've never seen lava, if you've never visited the Big Island in Hawaii, then you're just going to be absolutely blown away by how different this landscape is from anything that you've probably ever seen. Now, there are areas where you can walk around not only inside a crater, but also on top of a cinder cone volcano.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a few different kinds of volcanoes in the park as well. And one of the ones that I really enjoyed was Caldera Blanca. Now, within this crater, you can actually see all kinds of volcanic bombs and lapilli and pyroclasts.
Okay. And for those of us who don't know as much geology as you know, can you define what you're talking about?
Yes, absolutely. So volcanic bombs, pyroclasts, and lapilli are all different projectiles that come out when a volcanic eruption takes place. And volcanic bombs basically look like giant boulders. And the reason they're so interesting is because they're literally out in the middle of this landscape of lava rock and ash. So it's like you're walking on Mars in so much of the area, and you're walking through this ash with just nothing. There's no trees, there's nothing else. And then you're next to a giant boulder. And then the lapilli and pyroclasts are smaller pieces of the volcanic remnants. And if anyone wants more information on that, they can look it up about volcanoes. But I always really like geology. So if you're not into geology as much as me, the thing that you're going to notice about this area is the striking amount of colors, because there are a ton of different minerals in this area as well. So you're going to see blacks, you're going to see ruby reds, you're going to see greens. And if you look closer at some of the volcanic material, you're going to see all kinds of glittery substances and shiny greens and blues and pretty much every color you can find within this area if you really look closely enough. And I just thought it was just absolutely beautiful.
Excellent. And from the pictures I'm seeing, we're not talking about an area where all the volcanoes are extinct. I'm still seeing smoke coming up from various fissures and mountains and such on the island.
Yes, the area is still erupting in some places, or still active, I should say. There are some dormant volcanoes. There are some that are no longer in any state of being
extinct.
Alive anymore. Okay. Yes, extinct. But yeah, this is a little bit of everything in the area, depending on how much time you have and how much you want to see. Now, the other thing I recommend in this area is going to Lejeria, which is a region where they grow wine, and it's also a UNESCO site as well. It's actually spelled with a G, so G-E-R-R-I-A, I believe.
Okay.
And this area is so interesting because there's only two places like this in the world, one here on Lanzarote and the other one on the island of Pico in the Azores. And these are areas where, because it was hard to grow things and because the conditions weren't great, people got creative with how they were growing things. And they built these circles of lava rock that go on and on for as far as the eye can see in some areas. And within them are grape vines.
And when you say grape vines, a grapevine.
A grapevine, yes. A grapevine in each.
It's crazy. I've seen a picture of this, and someone described it as moon-like craters. To me, it almost looks more like the surface of a golf ball. All of these little indentations with a vine.
That's a great description. Yeah, it really does. And in this area, you can obviously go to some of the tasting rooms and try the wine that comes out of this region. I just loved it, walking around and exploring. You're going to get photos here no one's ever seen unless they've been to this area. So it's just a beautiful place to explore. And they do make white wine and red wine at the different tasting rooms. So I would definitely highly recommend adding that to your list of activities on Lanzarote as well.
Excellent. Yeah, it looks like a fascinating island. It seems to me that the closest equivalent inside the U.S. would be the Big Island of Hawaii, still volcanically active and still with so many different of these kind of geological formations. And if you liked that, it seems like you would like this. And you can't get the wine in Hawaii, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that the Big Island is probably the closest in landscape that you're going to get. And if anyone's ever been to the Azores, they'll know what I'm talking about with a similar wine growing region as well.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do on Lanzarote?
That pretty much sums up the main points of interest that I would recommend on these two islands.
Okay. And then I think you had one more stop on your itinerary.
Yes, the next stop would be flying to Tenerife, which is probably the second most popular island. It's one of the bigger islands. It has a lot of more built up American style cities and towns on it. So if you are looking to find something that's a little bit less off the beaten path, Tenerife is great. And there are several different areas that you can stay in, depending on what you're looking for. I've stayed in a few myself. There is the area of Costa Adige, and right around that area, and I believe this is the southern end of the island.
Southwestern corner of the island.
And there's Playa de las Americas here, and there's also, I know, and funnily enough, this is where you can find like Hard Rock Cafe and some other American chains. So if you are a little bit worried about going to something that's completely foreign, this is a great area to stay in. You're going to find a lot of restaurants and shops, and there's a mall there, but it's also right along the coast. So there's some beautiful beaches right in town that you can hip hop to and from. And there's always chairs that you can rent, beach chairs that you can rent here. There's also some mojito bars that sit right on the beach that you can get a fresh mojito at in the evening. So that's a great fun place to stay if you are looking for a little bit more of a party atmosphere. And then the other area that I recommend staying in on Tenerife is Puerto de la Cruz. Now, this is on the northwestern.
And the end of the road.
This is also a bigger city, and it's pretty cosmopolitan. There's some really, really nice hotels here and resorts where you're going to get, you know, five-star service, fantastic swimming pools, all that stuff. So if you are looking for a little bit more of a luxurious hotel, I definitely recommend this area. There's some great nude beaches here, and there's also a black sand beach in this area. The other great thing I love about this island in general is that you can actually go to beaches of almost every single color. So in Playa de las Americas, there's sand beaches. But if you go just south of there, there's actually a beach with red sand.
Okay.
And on the northern side of the island, as well as the northwestern side of the island, you're going to find black sand beaches. So it's really cool that you could travel the whole island and see all these different beach landscapes from its volcanic history and the geology of the island.
Well, in my impression of Tenerife is that, well, if I was looking for the party island, I'm probably in the right place now.
Yes, absolutely. Gran Canaria also is a great party atmosphere for those looking for that. And a lot of Europeans do go there, but it's also where a lot of spring breakers go. So if you want to avoid that, don't go to Gran Canaria during European spring break.
Okay.
But yeah, Tenerife has a little bit of everything. There's also a lot of other places I haven't mentioned yet. There is a place called Mosca, which is this area. And if you don't like driving on windy roads, I wouldn't recommend it. But it is this beautiful area of really stunning rock monoliths that are set high up above the ocean. And you can drive into this area. And it's a little bit harrowing. There are some tours that you can take as well, or take the bus. But you go up into this area of this beautiful landscape on these switchback roads. And you can have cactus tea at the end of the road where the road ends, prickly pear lemonade, and there's just some stunning views. And that's one of the definitely day tours that I recommend doing when you're on the island.
When you mentioned cactus tea, that really underlines the fact that you were saying that these are not lush tropical islands, but more desert islands in terms of landscape.
Yes, they are. But this island also has Teide National Park.
Okay.
And Teide National Park is actually home to the tallest mountain in Spain. And it's a little over 13,000 feet, but the landscape changes dramatically as you go from the beaches inland. And that goes with this island as well as some of the other ones that I haven't mentioned yet. So when you drive inland, you really start seeing more of a forested island.
Okay.
And over at Teide National Park, it's this very colorful park. There's massive walls of rock and stone. It would be a great place if you're into rock climbing. You can also climb the tallest mountain in Spain. They have a gondola that will take you up to the summit, and there's a viewing platform there that gives you these stunning views of the entire island, and you can see the sea of clouds rolling in when you're up there. And there's a observatory up there where you can actually spend the night. It's a refugio, and you can book a night there, but you do have to do it pretty far in advance if you do want to do that, and you can see all the stars. It's a great place to go if you're into astronomy, and it's called the Refugio de Alto Douro.
Okay. Well, and you were trying to describe what this looks like and trying to compare it with something. As I look at pictures of this, I would say the Cascade Mountains in Oregon and Washington. It looks very different. You know, we were talking about other parts of this landscape reminded me of Hawaii. Well, this is not. This is different.
Yes, and that's one of the things I love so much about the Canary Islands is that every island is so different than the last. I mean, none of them really look the same, and they all have features that are completely different than some of the other islands. So if you really have the time to explore more than one, you're really going to be able to see how different they are.
Excellent.
Now, there are a few other things on this island that I recommend doing. One is either going sailing or whale watching.
Okay.
There are breeds of pilot whales that are often around this island. And from the port of Playa Las Americas, you can easily hop on a couple hour or even longer boat, like a catamaran. There's also sailboats that you can go on to catch some of the whales. And you can actually, if you have more time, take a boat north, and you can go to that area that I was saying called Mosca from the ocean and see the big monolithic mountains that rise up out of that area. So that's a really beautiful tour to do as well.
Okay.
That I highly recommend.
You said there were a couple other things you recommend. One was the sailing. What was the other one?
The other one is a place called the Dragon Tree. And so the Dragon Tree is a tree that it looks like if you took a stalk of broccoli and then made sure there were no leaves on the lower stalk and then stuck it in the ground. That's kind of what a dragon tree looks like. It's not like a typical bushy green tree that we associate with the U.S. And there's only a few left on the island and in really the whole area of the Canaries. So there's a place that has a couple of them preserved there. And in this area, you can also see that cave I was talking about with the remains of some of the old guanches that used to inhabit the island.
Okay.
It's a really interesting place to go and see the history of the island as well.
And I assume the dragon tree was a native species to the Canaries.
It was. And it also used to be in many places throughout Africa.
Oh,
I don't know how much it still remains even in Africa, but I do know that the species in general is very small now. So that's one of the only places left in the world that you can see them.
Interesting.
And then there's one other beach that I recommend going to if you are down for adventure, and that's Benijo Beach. It's actually at the very far northern end of the island, and you definitely have to rent a car to get here. It's kind of like a locals' secret. But it's some harrowing roads to get there, but it's a black sand beach, and it's one of the best places I've ever seen for watching the sunset.
All right. Anything else we want to do in Tenerife before we start wrapping this up?
I think that's it. There's definitely much more to do there, but those are some of the biggest and most popular things. There's also some great restaurants. So if you're like seafood, definitely order some of the fresh fish and octopus that you're going to find on this island.
So before we get to some of our usual questions, you mentioned four islands so far that you picked out of the islands to go in the Canaries. If you had to sort of say the kind of person who should go to each one, so who should go to Tenerife, for instance, the person who really likes?
I think the person that really likes hiking and also exploring should go to Tenerife, because it's got a little bit of everything. And with El Teide being the tallest mountain in Spain, that's a really great place for people to go that definitely want to do that as one of their main points of interest.
Okay, and then doing these backwards from the order that we did them in before, who should go to Lanzarote?
People that are interested in geology and wine.
Okay, I think you've qualified me for that. And then before that, we did
Fuerteventura. So for Fuerteventura, definitely if you are a surfer or just want to get a relaxing beach vacation and aren't concerned with being in a super Americanized place.
Okay.
Fuerteventura is more of like a sleepy beach vacation.
Excellent. Good. That's good. That helps differentiate for me. And then lastly, we started at Gran Canaria.
Yeah, Gran Canaria is great for spring breakers. It's great for a younger crowd, but it's also fantastic for anyone looking for both beaches and hiking, because there are so many great, beautiful places to see there as well, as far as the hiking destinations go.
Terrific. And then in terms of food scene, you mentioned paella, and I think that's the only dish you mentioned. Is there anything else we should eat when we're in the Canary Islands?
Well, you definitely have to eat seafood. I mean, the seafood is fantastic. On one of the islands, I actually had fresh grilled parrotfish.
Okay.
And it's so funny because the owner of the restaurant, you get two when you order at some of these places. And I was like, well, why do you get two? And she said, well, they're husband and wife. And so I got two fried parrotfish. They're whole, and they were crunchy and delicious, kind of like a crispy chicken wing or something like that.
Well, and parrotfish and the Canaries just seems like a perfect combination there.
Exactly. There's also some great meat dishes if you are a meat eater. I am not, so I couldn't recommend anything by name, but because it's all the Spanish influence in these islands, you're going to get a lot of meat dishes. A lot of the restaurants will serve, it's called a meat fiesta.
Okay.
And it's actually just a smattering of sausage and steak and other grilled meats that is really great if you are a carnivore. There's also the potatoes are fantastic, and you're going to get them with a sauce called mojo sauce.
Okay.
And it comes in red and green, and it's really delicious, and it's served pretty much with everything. So
that sounds like some of the African culture coming in there a bit.
Yes. Okay. Definitely. Potatoes are huge. You're going to get them with a lot of dishes, and they're always really, really tasty as well.
Okay. I was thinking about the sauce being the African connection, but okay.
Oh, yes. Well, I've been to Africa and there were a lot of potatoes as well when I went there.
All right. Excellent. If I told you were standing in the prettiest spot in the Canary Islands, where would you be standing and what would you be looking at?
Probably Roque de los Muchachos. It's actually on the island of La Palma.
Okay.
And it's the highest point on that island, but it's an observatory where they have an observatory there and a bunch of satellites as well. But it is this, it's hard to describe actually how pretty it is, but it's a mountain peak. You drive for miles and miles and miles up to this high point on the island, and there's this sea of clouds that come in and cover the entire landscape. But there's these rocky protrusions that you can climb around on while you're up at this observatory. And depending on the time of day, if you're there at sunrise or sunset, you'll obviously get these fantastic colors mixed with the clouds. And sometimes the entire island disappears while you're up there. And it was one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen, and probably my favorite place on all of the islands.
Great. And if you had to summarize the Canary Islands in just three words, what three words would you use?
Extraterrestrial, colorful, and ornate.
Ornate. Now, that was not where I thought you would go with that. What is ornate about it?
You can't describe it in one, even in three words. There's so many intricate shapes. There's so many intricate mountains and carvings and things that have been melded by the volcanic landscape and the erosion, that it will just blow you away with all the different things you'll see.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Alice Ford from AliceAdventuresOnEarth.com. And Alice, if we wanted to send people to your best, I'm going to say blog post, but I will expand it for you because you do video as well, your best content on the Canary Islands, where are we going to send people?
You can find all that information at alicesadventuresonearth.com/Europe/Spain.
Excellent.
And from there, you'll find all my posts and all my videos as well.
And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Alice, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for the Canaries.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great chatting with you.
I had some additional feedback on the episode we did recently on Kenya, including the last word we're going to do here on proper malaria prevention from Mark, who knows where he's talking about. But some of the other things he mentioned were Nairobi National Park. So first I thought Shane was too dismissive of Nairobi National Park. It's immediately adjacent to the city, but actually has a fantastic range of animals, including one of the highest concentrations of black rhino in Africa, plus wonderful bird life. This gives the unique and poignant opportunity of photographing wild animals with the skyscrapers of the modern human world in the background. And I'm not going to read all of Mark's letter because it's rather long, but I'll put it in the show notes as well as in the lyrics. I actually thought that Shane was really pointing out that don't dismiss Nairobi, especially if you're not going to be in town for long. It's a place that he was recommending to go. So I think he liked Masai Mara and some of the other places better than Nairobi. But then the paragraph that I did want to read from Mark is, finally, I agree with you that the proper malaria prevention is key for travelers. The position is different for people like Shane who spend long periods exposed, but the side effect risks of modern anti-malarial drugs for a few weeks is very good. So always take the advice of an experienced physician. I'm a retired doctor who specialized in infectious diseases, by the way. There were 10,000 deaths from malaria in Kenya in 2016, and although the risks for travelers are statistically very low, the risk of getting malaria if you don't take prophylaxis is actually much higher than getting caught up in a terrorist incident, which for some reason people seem to worry about far more. And we'll give Mark the last word on this particular issue since he actually knows what he's talking about. And then again, I'll put his whole letter in the show notes. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Join the mailing list, which is also on the website. And as always, thanks so much for listening.